Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. The rush of racing? Nothing beats it. But Chumba Casino comes close. Chumba's got fast spins, fun games, daily bonuses, and all the action you can handle. Now that's a ride. Ready to hit the throttle? Get in the driver's seat and head to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Hello and welcome back to Pod on the Time. My name's Taylor Payne and it's a pleasure to be back in your ears on this sunny Wednesday morning. I've got George Colgan and Chris Woff with me. George, how the devil are you, sir? You all right?
I think I'm very well. Yeah, I'm still sort of coming to terms with Newcastle United and St James's Park and what I can only describe as arguably the... I've seen some strange shit in my time, Taylor. Let me say that for the record right at the start of the show. I have seen some weird shit with these eyes of mine. But that game was up there with one of the weirdest football matches I've been to.
It was. It was incredibly weird. Chris Woff, how are you feeling? You all right?
Yes, I'm all right, thank you. I sort of feel a little bit detached from it because obviously I wasn't actually there. But in some ways... I'm sort of pleased that I also wasn't there because it was sort of
me too.
It was funny when I had that exchange. Well, when I had the exchange with George during the first half, and I was like, "This is really boring." And he came back with, "No. This is really nice to have no jeopardy." And then 10 minutes later, he was like, "No, this is actually quite boring now." So that was
well. I still can't work it out. So maybe this will be a terrible, terrible pod. Anyway, how are you, Taylor?
Yes, I'm okay. I'm good. My dander is up. The sun is shining. I feel all right. I'm good.
Is the sap rising?
The sap has risen. Let's just say that okay. And leave it
good.
And move on.
Good.
Right, then this week's extra time offering was a match day pod with myself and Chris Woff in the immediate aftermath of Newcastle's 3-2 second leg and 9-3 aggregate victory over Karabag.
There were sirens as well, Taylor. Don't forget that.
There was lots of sirens. There's so many sirens, Chris. It was like doing the pod in South Central LA. That's what it felt like last night. To listen to that, plus a Q&A and special pods, you'll need an Extra Time subscription. Go to podonthetine.support and cast.fm and you can join in the fun. Get your queries into podonthetine@gmail.com or get in touch via social media or Discord or Carrier Pigeon or Smoke Signal or old-fashioned Telegram where you have to write stop at the end. Do that as well. But first, headlines in 30 seconds or less. Newcastle United in the last 16 of the Champions League, George Colgan.
Well, we have to start there, don't we? However weird or otherwise that match was, Newcastle are in the last 16. That's the first time they've been in the knockout phase proper of the Champions League. It's a big achievement. It was what they set out for at the start of the season, and it sets them up with a really, really big tie against either Chelsea or Barcelona. We'll find out on Friday. But yeah, you do have to step back and say, well done, great achievement.
Absolutely. Chris, how are Newcastle?
So the controversial move, I suppose, in some ways, in the way it's been received, that Newcastle United are attempting to trademark the phrase, "How are the lads?" Having already successfully trademarked the phrase, "How are the lasses?" They applied for both on March 14th, 2025 last year to the UK Intellectual Property Office, and basically what it would permit them to do if they are granted it and have already been granted for "How are the lasses?" is on certain retail items, and that it covers a wide variety of things ranging from football shirts, unsurprisingly, but also to things such as toasters and fridges and various other weird alcoholic beverages as well. That only they could use the phrase "How are the lads?" I think there's a little bit of surprise within Newcastle from some people that it hadn't already been done, but yeah, they are attempting to do it, but someone has also raised an objection, so it's still ongoing, that situation.
Fair play. Newcastle United's leadership issues, George Colgan.
Newcastle will be actively seeking leadership when they come to look at new players this summer. This is a topic we'll come on to discuss in a bit more length, but thought that was interesting. Jamal Lascelles has left the leadership group. He won't be replaced until the summer. And they believe that this idea of leadership is a concern within the club because the new younger players coming through are less vocal.
And jeepers keepers, Chris Woff.
Yes, so on Friday night, I was at Whitley Park to see Newcastle United under-21s win 3-0 against
God,
Fulham.
You know how to do
a Friday
victory. Night, Chris, don't you?
I do know how to do a Friday night. And actually, this I think it was the 17th youth-level game I've seen this season and the first time I've seen Newcastle win any of
Dedication.
Them. I was almost borderline. There was only half jokingly, I think, some senior figures at Newcastle suggested I should just not turn up to Newcastle youth games anymore because I was a bit of a bad luck charm. But they did win 3-0 and they've had a bit of a rise under Robbie Stockdale since Adam Lawrence returned to Man United as their under-21 head coach. But the big talking point really from the match was that Aidan Harris, who had been in Newcastle's Champions League squad across in Karabag and has been in previous Champions League squad, I think he was a 16-year-old, he went to AC Milan as well, he scored from 2/3 of the way inside his own half.
Oh my word. That's possibly the best slip up I've ever heard from you, Chris. 2/3 of the way inside of his own arse.
Are you comfortable with that sound? Good, sound?
Good lord, that is quite a feat, Chris. How did he pull it off?
And 2/3 of the way inside his own half, he came out, rushed to clear the ball. He has a long kick on him anyway, and it caught the wind, and the Fulham goalkeeper was sort of completely unaware. It went over his head, bounced once.
Caught the wind, did it, Chris?
Caught the wind, yeah. But yeah, Aidan Harris scored his, what will unsurprisingly be his first ever under-21s goal for Newcastle. Quite spectacular, but yeah, great result for them as well.
Oh, sorry, I didn't hear a word of that. I was too busy dying in hysterics.
There's no way this is 30 seconds or less, by the way. Well, headlines in 30 minutes or less brought to you
the two
by
headlines
Chris
you've
Woff.
Given me are two stories which require explanation, so...
You've ruined the last one. That poor kid. Like, it's the best moment of his life and career, and you've ended it with an arse joke.
It wasn't even a joke. Wasn't even a
awful.
Joke.
Awful behaviour.
Unbelievable.
Right, let's move on very swiftly, please.
I'm happy. I'm going to get me suit measured.
Karabag reflections, here we go. Eddie Howe after the first leg. We know the tie is not dead or over. Opta, Newcastle's victory in Baku is the 92nd time that a team have won by 5+ goals in the first leg of a two-legged knockout stage in the European Cup / UEFA Champions League. Each of the previous 91 went on to progress. It is now 92 from 92 for Newcastle United. Let's begin by zooming out and looking at the bigger picture, George Colgan. We know you love that.
Yeah, I want to do this, and I think it's important. I mean, that match at St James's was peculiar for all sorts of reasons, but Newcastle have thrashed their opponent in a playoff tie to get into the knockout stage of the Champions League 9-3. I mean, that is pretty incredible. They have reached their pre-season goal. This is what they were looking at the start of the season. This is the target they set themselves. They're in the last 16 of the most prestigious club competition in the world. This is the kind of company they think they belong to now, and want to be part of. You know, the big idea is that they win everything, kind of moving forward. Eddie Howe has become the most, God, I hate this phrase, but it's an American word, so I apologise to all our American listeners, but it's the most winningest English manager in a single season in the Champions League. So he's won 6 games, which is more than Harry Potter, I was going to say, but it's Graham Potter and Sir Bobby.
I think it is more than Harry Potter as well, though.
And also more than Harry Potter, and also Sir Bobby. And they're also the top scorers in the competition, probably not surprisingly, after what's just happened. So by any standards, this is a really good achievement. And certainly by their own standards, it's now uncharted territory. And it's just something that you have to take a step back, you know, back from and say that it's a really big deal. And it's not overshadowed by what happened in the second leg against Karabag. It's a big deal, and it should be celebrated.
Yes, it is job done, Chris, isn't it? And the reward is a big, big tie against either please Barcelona, or definitely please not Chelsea. What do we think?
Yeah, well, Barcelona is the, you said this on the extra time pod, is the glamour tie, really, I think, is the romantic one. Sir Bobby Links and really the sort of European giants, where you would feel you're in a European competition as well, playing European side rather than the Premier League side. Newcastle lost to them at St. James's early in the season over two legs. It'll be fascinating to see how they'll cope against the current leaders of La Liga, the defending La Liga champions as well. Chelsea, possibly more winnable. Certainly I'd fancy Newcastle at St. James's against them. Their record at Stamford Bridge is not very good, but they would then, if they did get Chelsea, they would be playing Chelsea midweek, then on the Saturday in between, and then the away game. So the home first game would be at home, and then the away game would be in the set midweek. So it would be literally three times in a row they would be playing Chelsea, which really for nobody is very
I'm going to put my hand up, Chris, and say I can't be arsed with that. I really can't. That's too much. It's too much Chelsea.
So you ring UEFA and tell them?
If you like, could, oh, please, use your contacts. Somebody at Y Scout, I'd imagine that's what you have, don't you?
Yeah, because they deal with all the fixture scheduling and things.
It's all the same company. This is a big deal, George, as you said before, particularly in a season which has often been challenging, hasn't it? But Newcastle's cup record is absolutely extraordinary.
Incredible, defending their Carabao Cup until the semi-final, and now in the Champions League. Yes, it's a different format this season, but they've done what they set out to do, and you know, just the league, the Premier League has been a slog, and I don't think there's any denying that it's been very difficult. But in the kind of one-off games or the cup games, they've managed to rouse themselves. It's where they've been at their best. I think it's easier for them to do that than it has been in the Premier League when they are in this sort of transitional phase in terms of how they play and how they want to play moving forward. And it's a big deal. Yeah, I mean, I don't know what would be the best tie for them in the next round, but I do know that St James's Park will be absolutely frothing for that match. I mean, it will be brilliant, and it means that by the time mid-March rolls around, Newcastle will still be actively pursuing a competition. Yeah. Absolutely still in the thick of it. Whatever happens in the FA Cup, I mean, it's a great position to be in, and I think it lifts everybody, doesn't it?
I forgot to also say that the draw is on Friday, 11 a.m. Well, that's what time it starts.
Yeah, it could UK be any time that afternoon.
It'll probably
it?
Go on yeah. for an eternity, yeah, when we have all the montages and wheel out some player who played 25 years ago for Monaco or something. So anyway, that's when we will find out whether it is either Chelsea or Barcelona. And also Newcastle will also find the entire potential route to Budapest, where the final is in May. Oh, can they repeat the 1969 European victory in Budapest? Oh, we shall see.
Exciting stuff. We have done the big picture, but we have to zoom right back in and look at the smaller picture too. In isolation, that Carabao second leg was a peculiar affair, George.
Carabao.
The Carabao second leg.
They won the Carabao Cup. I know, okay.
The Carabao second leg was a peculiar affair. George, you've already spoken about the weirdness of the occasion, but why was that?
Well, talking about the slog of this season, I mean, one thing that's been pretty extraordinary is that, A, obviously, how the fixture list has just been crammed. You know, there's been no free midweek since the end of August, not including international break. So that's been part of it. The second part of it is that it's certainly felt to me that every single one of those games has had something riding on it. And there's been no gimmies. There's been no gimmies in that time. So Newcastle have had to try and find, every Premier League game has had pressure because things haven't been going the way they wanted. There's been the League Cup games, obviously, they have to get through. FA Cup games, they have to get through. And then, of course, the Champions League, you have to go at it full tilt. You could look back at the, Bradford City game in the League Cup, I suppose, and think that that was an opportunity to make some changes and perhaps take your foot off the gas a little bit. But until this game last night, that just hasn't been part of the sort of formula, because there has been that jeopardy. There's been something big at stake. Now, I'm not saying there wasn't something big at stake last night, because of course there was, but Newcastle realistically had already done it, hadn't they? And so to be in St James's, with it was a full stadium, more or less 50,000 people in it. To be there without that feeling of tension was just very weird. And so when I was saying to Chris, oh no, this is actually quite good fun, I did enjoy that first 10 minutes because it felt like, I mean, obviously Newcastle started brilliantly, but it also felt, okay, well, this is kind of just joyous. It's like a joyous occasion. There's no pressure. You know, you can see the players want to impress. They're having a go. And oh, this is what it's like to play football without that sort of fear. And in the end, it turned out to be something sort of quite different. It became kind of quite ragged and a bit messy, which we'll come back to. But it just made it really, really peculiar. I mean, I can't think of many more. I mean, I can think of, you know, strange games at St. James's, where there's been a kind of extreme event, you know, players getting sent off or lots of goals or, you know, whatever, you know, Newcastle getting relegated and singing Rafa's name, all sorts of sort of strange, interesting stuff's happening. But just in terms of that atmosphere and general peculiarness of it, I just thought that stood out like a sore thumb.
It certainly did. And like George said, there was two goals in 90 seconds and people were thinking record win. Incoming, maybe, Chris? And the answer to that is no.
Yeah, so look, I was looking at this on The Athletic, ready for potentially writing about it. Newcastle's record European win was a margin of 8 goals against Royal Antwerp in the early 90s. This was, in the end, it was a 6-goal margin. But Newcastle, as George said, are the top scorers in the Champions League. That's slightly skewed by the fact they've had these two extra games, so they've moved ahead of the likes of Arsenal and Bayern Munich. But still, it did feel at that stage, yeah, that it could be really a very embarrassing, I mean, it's embarrassing anyway to lose 9-3 over two legs, but it could be really one of those matches where you think, why are Karabag in there? Or people look at it from afar and say, why are Karabag even in this tournament? They've managed to reach that stage of it, so they've clearly done something right. But yeah, in some ways it was the ideal start, because it really was it sort of settled any nerves there may have been. But in the other way, it was almost like, well, what is the point of the remaining 84 minutes of this match plus additional time? I mean, they didn't even have additional time at the end of the first half, did they? Which very much felt like one of those mercy situations where it's like, what's the point in adding time on here? Yeah. And they only gave 3 minutes, I think, at the end of the game as well. So
yes, and then, as we said last night, George, that first half after those two goals went in, it turned into a bit of a training session, didn't it?
This is where the fun, boring debate, I think, started with yeah. with Chris and I. And I, you know, I think I kind of came around to his way of thinking by the end, because you know, you do want that feeling of meaning, and of course the game had lost any meaning as a contest with those two. I mean, it never had it, obviously, but that made absolutely sure of it. So from that point, it's sort of, what are you looking to kind of get out of the game? And I mean, it was funny afterwards, because Eddie Howe sort of said, oh, you know, those two early goals put us in a dangerous moment, I think was the phrase he used. Now, he wasn't talking about, you know, he wasn't talking about the tie overall, but the quite interesting thing was how much he wanted to win that match as a single one-off occasion. I mean, he would not have been happy if Karabag had won 2-0. You know, ultimately, that wouldn't have made a difference.
You want to win every game, though, don't you? He clearly wants to win every
game. But he was quite irritated. You want to win every, you know, and like some of the motivation and the sort of fallout, I think, becomes kind of quite interesting. Which we will come on to, but it's that interesting thing again. Newcastle have never, well, so rarely have they. I mean, they've been bad at closing games out. We know that historically this season it's been tough for them. You know, from winning positions, conceding late goals, that sort of thing. What you want from your team at that point, I guess, is professionalism. You want them to be able to sort of self-manage. Obviously, you don't want to run yourself into the ground. You want to sort of have that balance between easing off and switching off. And I don't think Newcastle actually did that very well.
Drew McIntyre here from WWE. Wielding the Claymore can be a life of chaos. When I'm not dominating in the ring, Chumba Casino is how this warrior takes a wee break. With hundreds of online social games and new weekly releases, there's always something fresh to try. And those daily boosts, next level. Even my free time feels like Valhalla. So when life feels like a battle, kick up your feet, have some fun, and let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Let's spell again in proper Raji.
There was some senior players in that side last night. Chris, leadership was on show still. You two have written about this week.
Yeah, so Howe actually played, certainly Dan Byrne, who was one game away from is still one game away from a suspension, one booking away from a suspension in the Champions League. Same with Joel Linton. I mean, Joel Linton isn't part of the official leadership group, but he is one of the more vocal players. Jacob Murphy started, he's part of the leadership group. Kieran Trippier, I think it was his 8th start in a row, he started 11 of the last 12. And although Howe made 7 changes, it was a strong lineup, and I think part of the reason why he wanted senior players out there, and he saw it in the Bradford City League Cup game, and he tends to see this in cup games. Even when he makes changes, he likes to have at least one or two of his leadership group on display, basically to set standards and to set the standards for the rest of the team. And that leadership group has been there since the summer of 2022. It's expanded from 5 to 6. It's now back down to 5 that Jamal Lascelles has left. Some of the players like Matt Ritchie and Callum Wilson have moved on, and Jamal Lascelles, others have been elevated to the group. But George and I have written about leadership, and out Newcastle, that's an important thing right now. Post Brentford, it was huge that Newcastle found a way, not just through Eddie Howe, who was very low obviously in that moment immediately after the game, but the leadership group got together and in the dressing room after the Brentford game basically sowed the seeds of the mini recovery which has happened since. And Jacob Murphy, ahead of this Champions League match, was speaking and he spoke about everyone making it clear that they needed to play with quote unquote one brain, and so everyone on the same level when it comes to pressing and sort of same wavelength there.
Just to interject there, Chris, it takes me back to that, because that was one of the things that stood out afterwards. After that game, there was a moment when Jacob led the press at Brentford, and actually Brentford then went and scored at the other end of the pitch, right, yeah. And Jacob turned around and like put his hands in the air and said, "Where is everybody?" And I just thought, you know, it's like that stood out for a mile for me from that game. I love that phrase that he used, that, yeah, we've got to get back to being like together on the pitch, everybody all in it together. You press at the same time, you do everything at the same time, working together. That is where Newcastle are at their absolute best. And, you know, the fact that the senior players played a role in that, big role in that, I thought was interesting. Sorry, Chris, I didn't mean to...
No, that's a good point. And so George and I wrote about this for The Athletic, about the leadership group, what is it, and sort of the how important they've been generally over the last 3 years, but certainly the last 3 weeks, but also moving forward, how this is an active consideration because, as I said, Lascelles has already left, Kieran Trippier highly likely to leave this summer, Dan Byrne, and I think it was all members, barring Bruno Guimaraes, the captain, are already over the age of 30, and so like the likes of Byrne and Jacob Murphy still have time at the club and like to think that they could contribute for years to come, but equally there needs to be the sort of next generation of leaders, and a lot of the players, other players who may be seen as that, Sandro Tonali, who was vice-captain at AC Milan, Malik Chow, other players like that, they aren't necessarily vocal on the pitch, and going into the summer and beyond, Newcastle in their recruitment meetings, as they have done in previous years as well, it is something they are thinking about. They want to sign largely players under the age of 24 who can develop, but they don't want to go too far one way whereby they don't have the leaders around them who can really help them develop and offer that sort of guidance on and off the field. So we just thought that was something very interesting, that is something to look for in a summer which is already going to be very busy.
There has been a bit of a sort of response sort of on social media, so I do just want to kind of clear that up. It's sort of like, oh, we're doing the club's dirty work for them here. We're like, this is going to be a charter for Newcastle signing old players, old experienced Premier League players. And that is absolutely not what this is. This was a conversation that Chris and I had, thought this would be an interesting subject to look at, bearing in mind how important those senior players are and have been. And that isn't the case at all. It's not like they're paving the ground for bringing in 29-year-old players. I mean, I would point out, however, that when you look at this current leadership group, you look at Trippier and you look at Byrne in particular, how important they are, you know, worth their weight in gold. You know, yes, it's dead money in terms of they won't get transfer fees back for those players, but the way that they have brought on the players around them, there should always be room, you know, for a team to have those kind of players. I mean, you know, like, You can't measure it, but how much better will Tino Livramento and Lewis Hall be, for example, from working with someone like Trippier?
Yeah,
you know. So I do think that's an important thing to say, but that is absolutely not what the club are talking about this summer. But perhaps there may be an exception for a player who's 25, 26, who has leadership. I just thought that has a leadership quality. You know, we often think about talent. We think about, you know, this player can score goals, this player's versatile, he does that. But leadership as a sort of recruitment subject is not something that we necessarily think about too often. But as Chris says, when they were looking at, I mean, there's an irony, of course, with Tonali because of what happened with his ban. But actually, those leadership qualities that he'd showed at AC Milan were a factor in their discussions when it came to signing him. I just thought that was kind of fascinating.
And those players drive standards as well, George, don't they? And I thought it was interesting last night after the full-time whistle that some of those senior players were visibly unhappy at the fact that Newcastle had shipped those two goals. Dan Byrne was furious at full-time. Aaron Ramsdale looked very, very unhappy with the fact that he hadn't kept a clean sheet.
I mean, Byrne had been partly at fault.
Well, absolutely, yeah.
But you want to see
that, though, don't you? You don't want them to sack off games like that and think that it's just a, you know, we can just go through the motions here. You want them to be angry and you want them to be annoyed after those games.
No, absolutely. I think all those things are important. And again, it's also not to say that this is like a charter for bringing someone in. Yeah. All he does is shout. I mean, that's not what it's about. If you look at that leadership group they've got now, you know, Bruno Guimaraes he's captain and he leads by example. It's his energy, it's his passion, it's his emotion that sets a standard. You know, Trippier, as you say, is a standard setter. Now, Dan Byrne is a shouter. Jacob Murphy admits himself, he's not vocal, but he sets a different kind of standard around the place. It's his willingness to work for the team. He doesn't complain if he's left out. He follows the manager's instructions and, you know, is absolutely that kind of player. So it's about having those different sort of qualities as leaders. So it's not saying that everybody has to be shouting all the time. That's not what it is. But if you suddenly do have a very quiet dressing room, that does make a change. Now, one thing that Jacob said the other day about Jamal Lascelles, I thought was very interesting. He said he was the aggressive one. And it was kind of quite, you know, it was kind of quite funny in some ways. But, you know, in other words, he was the one in the dressing room. I'm not saying literally got hold of people, but he would be the one that, you know, that was sort of intimidating, that had that, you know, had that element to his character. And they've lost that now. And so they have to compensate a bit.
Is one of your cats destroying your office right now?
What sounds like.
I'm not sure what he wants. What do you want? What do you want?
I think that's translating into ham, doesn't it, in cat speak?
That's Freddie. He always wants ham.
Oh, hello there.
Sorry about that.
There we go. So there was definitely a lack of intensity last night and probably a lack of identity as well. On Newcastle, Chris, and St James's Park, the worst team / venue for such an exercise. I think they probably are.
Possibly, although I think you could argue. I mean, I've been to. You get a lot of comments about Man City at the Etihad and when there's sort of nights like that. I don't think it's unique to Newcastle. I think that, and this is maybe something going forward, which is, I've had this chat a few times with other journalists who cover Man City a lot, is that what you don't want with Newcastle, if they ever get to being anywhere near as successful as Man City have been over the last 15 years, is that atmosphere where expectation levels have risen to such a degree that if things aren't quite going as you want, that suddenly the atmosphere drains, or equally, if the game is already put to bed so early that sort of atmosphere drains. And I think that was borderline inevitable last night. It was just a weird all-round sort of... It doesn't feel like a Champions League knockout round game.
Early in the game it felt fairly celebratory and the fans were singing, got the songbook out, and I thought that was quite nice. But then, obviously, as time went on and Carabao got a couple of goals, it sort of drained away, didn't it? And it wasn't that anymore, which is a shame. Let's talk about winners and losers from last night. Nick Valtamada is perhaps the most talked about Newcastle United player right now. Eddie Howe wasn't exactly effusive in his appraisal for the German either. We spoke about his new development as a number 8 last week, and it feels like there's still a lot of work to be done there, George.
Yeah, why don't we hear, first of all, from Eddie Howe talking about him afterwards.
Yeah, I think it's probably the least he's affected the game in the time that he's played in that position, but I thought there were some really good bits, and amongst that, I think there was really, really limited in space. I think they defended very well in front of their back four. So a new challenge for him, something he's going to have to overcome, but I don't think it was necessarily his fault. I don't think the team function well after going 2-0 up and scoring two really good early goals. I thought we struggled to break them down.
I thought that was interesting. As I said earlier, I thought there was a sort of slightly chippy tone to Eddie Howe afterwards. I mean, I don't mean that in a kind of critical way, because he's always on time, he's always polite, he always answers absolutely every question. But I don't know if he was sort of irritated with that second half performance. But That's certainly how it felt. And I thought that was interesting that he was quite so plain. I mean, Chris, you were watching on telly, and I know that there was kind of quite a lot of criticism from Alan Shearer and Wayne Rooney about Walter Marder, you know, not getting forward enough. And kind of at the time, I sort of thought, well, you know, maybe that's a bit harsh because he is playing this deeper role. He's not, you know, he's not playing as one of the forwards. He's actually playing in midfield, and he definitely brings, you know, something different to that role. But Howe sort of saying he can't get that far away from goal, we need to get him closer to goal, was kind of interesting. And I suppose, you know, you look at the opponents where Newcastle were in the tie, that should be a game that somebody of his talent and quality should be getting hold of and sort of moulding to your talents, albeit that there was the odd nice touch. He definitely did not do that.
I'm slightly more empathetic with Voldemort. I think there's been a lot of suggestions and comparisons and the sandy parallels raised with Joe Linton, a centre-forward who signed as a club record signing and moves to be a midfielder. A, Joe Linton, that was a permanent move. Voldemort, we don't know yet if this is going to be a permanent move. He's still signed as a striker, and I think in time, once Newcastle have time on the training ground with Eddie Howe, the idea was when they signed him that they wanted to quote-unquote evolve and change the way that they play, and so I still think that is something that may happen going forward. But I also think the difficulty for Voldemort is, unlike Joe Linton, is he's not all action, he's not everywhere, and so this idea that he's going to be up and down the pitch and things, yeah, I don't think he's going to be that in no matter which position you play him in. He's just a different sort of player. Now, I'm not saying he couldn't have done more. He probably should have done more against Karabag, and there could have been more to bring from him. But he is adapting on the hoof to this new role, and it was a much changed side. I get the idea he needs to be in the box more, but I think that if he wasn't a centre-forward who'd been moved in that position, if he'd say a left-back who'd been moved in that position or from a different that then people wouldn't be making his bigger thing about him getting in around the box. That's my only issue with it, is I do think we can get more from him, but I also feel that he's been asked to learn a new role and to be hypercritical of that when he hasn't had loads of training time and when he is still adapting to it. That would be my response to it.
We got a message off Jack Carlisle on Blue Sky as well, who said he didn't think much of the Voldemort analysis on TV. He said he plays Byrne through to set up the first goal, he plays Barnes through to set up the Joe Linton goal, and he plays Murphy through for what should have been a goal as well. He's played through balls for all three of our big chances in that first half, which is fair enough. He's doing the job that he's being asked to do, but there needs to be more to his game, doesn't there? I think that's the point Eddie Howe was trying to make.
Yeah, I think that's it. I mean, he said that there were some nice moments, some really good moments, and, you know, obviously talked about the way Karabag set up, and that's kind of more, you know, difficult to kind of get through, but I think it's that sort of sense of being involved, and so instead of being a moment player, you're a well, I don't know, that's quite a nice idea, isn't it? Quite a nice concept. Instead of being a moment player, you're a, what are you? You're a everything player. I don't know, what would that be? What would that be, Chris?
I don't know. This is another one of your sort of
a moment
esoteric
player.
Sort of thing.
He is a moment player. So he's a moment. So there have been a lot of really good moments, but it's about making that moment something that lasts throughout a match. That, you know, he does have, I said it before, he has got the talent to get a hold of a game, I think, yeah, and make this, yeah, a Walter Marder game. And he hasn't done that. There have been Walter Marder moments, but there haven't been Walter Marder matches.
Can I just say you've done really well there to develop that into something semi-coherent. It was,
thank you, I really appreciate it.
There was
you.
Real danger of that turning into a Gabriel Aubertin-style run down the left-hand side to nowhere.
I mean, I still think it was that. I think it was that.
Blind alley kind of that. Thing. But you've done all right. No, you've done well there.
I'm not influencing this podcast. I mean, I've chipped in with the odd moment.
You've had your moments,
I'm not influencing it, no.
Chris, Will Osula, is it a bit harsh to judge him on that game alone? We have to mention, obviously, Ewan Wissa's back as well, and he looked a bit rusty off the bench. But Will Osula, what did you think of his performance?
Yeah, so Wissa had been out for four games, came on. I think there was a lot of... I actually expected him to start just from what Howard said in the previous games, but clearly didn't feel he was quite ready for that. And yeah, he does look rusty, still hasn't reached that sort of peak fitness that really you want. For Will Osula... Yeah, I mean, I was a bit down on him after Aston Villa when a lot of people talked about the way forward, either him or Gordon through the middle. I just think that it's chalk and cheese, really. I think Gordon affects the game. If we're talking about somebody who affects the game far more regularly, I think that that's what Gordon does. What Osula can do and does well is lead the press, But beyond that, I think, I mean, he had the fewest touches of any Newcastle player. He just seemed, for who played the length of time he did, he just seemed peripheral to me. He didn't really get involved. He had that sort of one chance in the lead up to Tonali's goal, but didn't really have that many more beyond that. I think it is harsh to judge him on that game alone. He's not getting a consistent run in the side, and therefore he can't get decent rhythm. But I'm just not convinced that he is necessarily the answer. Other people have been talking about the chaos that he brings. I'm not sure it has the positive differential that necessarily Newcastle need.
Yeah, all I would say about that is that if we're willing to say that Wissa looks rusty, we have to say that Asula has missed something like 6 months or 5-6 months with injury too. And it does take a long time to...
3 months, I think, but yeah. Just add
September, October, November, December, January, February.
He played at West Ham in November, did he not?
Here we go.
I mean, if you're going to be pedantic about these things...
You know he's going to be pedantic about these things. Don't
did he? Maybe
don't pretend
did.
That this is a new thing.
I should. Well, I should get my facts right. I think that's fair enough.
Yeah, he played on the 2nd of November.
Okay. Well, I'm going to stick with my opinion.
Let Chris do facts. You do emotions, George. We know that works.
Well, we're in a post fact era.
You speak
so
your truth.
I'm just going to stick with 6 months. I'm going to speak my truth. It is a matter of months, and he's not had a lot of football either. So I think that's fair to say. What I would say about that performance was that it was the problem with being a 100 miles an hour footballer.
Yeah.
Is that is Will Asula. I mean, like that pace could be such a threat. Can be such a threat. But it's like his body is quicker than his brain. And so you want him to be able to say, okay, now is not the time that I run. Now is the time that I sit and wait, see what develops, and then I run. And it feels like he's trying to make decisions whilst running at 100 miles an hour. And I think that is very difficult. That pace gives him proper, raw, something that defenders hate, but it's got to be channeled. And so... having given him some factually incorrect mitigation, which apparently I have done, you also have to say that was a big opportunity for him, and I don't think he took it.
Yeah.
So, he certainly isn't one of the winners of the night. I think there is a bit of background. Newcastle do like him, but you want to see more from him. And again, yes, just did not impact the game in a positive way.
100-mile-an-hour football in a 5-mile-an-hour game.
Well, yeah.
Dangerous stuff.
Yeah.
My dad summarised his performance last night by messaging me at 11 o'clock and saying that Asula, he's all fart and no shit, which I thought was... expect to see him on one of those really cerebral football YouTube channels anytime soon. Yeah, he'll be on there, definitely. We got sloppy in that second half, didn't we? Eddie Howe said we didn't show the urgency we needed to go and get more goals, and we paid for that. We became disjointed, so there's a lot to improve on, Chris.
Yeah, and I think there was some frustration inside the dressing room, inside the club, really, with how that did happen in the second half. All of the lineup, the way Newcastle started, all of it was about keeping the rhythm and not dropping any of those levels that did during that second half. So very frustrating in that regard. And it did almost feel a bit deflating come the end of the game. And I mean, particularly if Carabag had got a goal and equalised, or even got on to sort of win the game, as George said earlier, how desperately wanted to win the tie. It's now 3 clean sheets in 28 games in all competitions. I think that has to be an annoyance that in neither of these two legs, Newcastle have kept a clean sheet. Defence changed again, but yeah, I think very, very frustrating.
We have to mention Alex Murphy and, of course, Leo Shahar as well, who made his debut. Alex Murphy looked solid, George, at the back, dependable, a couple of nice touches.
Yeah, he's had to wait a long time for his full debut, and I thought he acquitted himself perfectly reasonably. I mean, it wasn't, it's a peculiar game, as we've already said, and then it kind of went ragged, but he looked solid, he looked professional, and great moment for Leo Shahar to come on as well.
Lovely stuff. And Howe said afterwards he really enjoys this format. Chris, you want to have a little bit of a rant about the Champions League, apparently.
Yeah, I'll try to keep this brief, but more just For Newcastle, it has been of a huge benefit that it's got them through to the last 16. I mean, people keep saying it's the first time in the history. Technically, it isn't under Sir Bobby Robson. That it was the second group phase was 16 teams split across different groups. It is the first time they've reached a knockout stage, although technically they've already been in the knockout stage because they've just won those two ties again.
They've been in the last 16 before, haven't they?
It's the first time they've got to the round of 16.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Yeah. But even all of that, and this is not to diminish how winning being the most winningest or whatever term George used, English manager in history, but again that's partly to do with this format. I think that this the difference between the two teams over these legs, I mean you look at Bodo Glimt and Inter Milan would be the counter to what I'm about to say, but it just shows that it's sort of nonsense. We've got to this stage now where there's 16 teams, it feels like the Champions League is about to begin now, and that all of this has been a bit of a prelude. There was no narrative to the league phase really. You don't play teams twice, home and away, so I don't think you get that sort of feel that you did previously. So yes, it's been to Newcastle's benefit, but I also think that basically it is just a money-making exercise. Newcastle have got 14 million by getting to this stage or whatever it is additional, so it's great in that sense, and it's great that Newcastle have reached it, but yeah, I'm not massively sold on it as a general concept.
There's your headline, Chris, not massively sold on the Champions League. There we go. Let's move on.
Overrated.
Yeah, massively overrated. Let's talk about Everton.
Looking for excitement? Chumba Casino is here. Play anytime, play anywhere. Play on the train, play at the store, play at home, play when you're bored. Play today for your chance to win and get daily bonuses when you log in. So what are you waiting for? Don't delay. Chumba Casino is free to play.
Experience social gameplay like never before. Go to Chumba Casino right now to play hundreds of games, including online slots, bingo, Slingo, and more. Live the Chumba life at ChumbaCasino.com.
Who shall I come to for the first point, the Premier League form? Shall I go to you, George?
Is it? Okay, well, I need to... Yeah, okay.
Well, do you want me to answer this then?
No, because that'll... What is the run in the Premier League? 4 defeats out of 5, correct?
1 win in 6 as well.
1 win in 6 in the Premier League, okay.
All good?
Come on, you Maggies.
So we turn our attentions to Everton on Saturday, a lesser spotted Saturday 3 p.m. kickoff for the visit of the Toffees, and we've got the lesser spotted Jacob Whitehead with us as well. Hello, Jacob, bonnie lad, how are you doing?
I'm good, how are you guys doing? I'm fresh back from the Winter Olympics. I've been focusing on cross-country skiing.
Lovely.
Ski jumping.
Penises.
Yeah, it's been a strange 2 weeks.
The advantage of penises in ski jumping. Peni.
I tried to chase if this was real, and sadly, this is the German tabloids overdoing it. If only it was real, but no. A little overblown.
No, oh, what a shame.
You're about to take up ski jumping.
It's lovely to have you back, Jacob. Thanks for joining us. We have to think about this game on Saturday. George, the Premier League form, it still needs addressing, doesn't it? Especially at St. James's Park.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, obviously this mini reset, if you want to call it, came after Newcastle 2, Brentford 3 in the Premier League. Since then, it's 4 wins out of 5 in all competitions, and that's been very heartening. But if you're just looking at Premier League form, it's only 1 win in 6. There have been 4 defeats in that time too. And, you know, having talked about... Stop smirking, Chris, just because I'm repeating things that you said to me 2 minutes ago doesn't mean that you can have that kind of shit-eating grin on your face. God, you're annoying. You know, having talked about the lack of jeopardy against Carabag, it of course comes roaring back against Everton because it's a game that Newcastle really need to win. They've got, you know, they do now have the rare luxury of consecutive home games, Everton and Man U in the league. They've got to pick up form in the Premier League. Ultimately, that's how they're judged. And, you know, the good thing is that they should be going into these matches now with much more confidence, playing with one brain, as we discussed. But yeah, it's another big match. They've got to continue that form in domestic football.
Jacob, you're here because Everton, they're a bit of a riddle at the moment, aren't they?
Results-wise, yeah, performance is less so. I think we're quite an interest. Well, actually, if anything, we're not an interesting team because we have, I say, we're an embodiment of sort of that like high floor, low ceiling sort of side. We tend to not concede many goals. I think we've got something like the fifth best defence in the league. We just don't score many either. So generally, yeah, like, we're in every game. It's just kind of the level of the other team often seems to dictate the results. What's interesting with Newcastle is that it was a, you know, almost the only time all season that we've been thrashed was at the Hill Dickinson by Newcastle in November. That's almost been a bit of an exception. Generally, if we lose, it's by a goal, it's a dull draw, it's that sort of thing. So yeah, Newcastle kind of subverted that a bit. But as you saw at the end of last season, when Everton came up to St James's and got a result, when Newcastle really had everything to play for, Everton sort of do have the capability to shut the game down a bit.
We should point out that they are above Newcastle in the Premier League. They're ninth in the minute. And their away record is actually very, very good. I think only Arsenal have won more away games in the Premier League this season. Do you have a theory as to why Everton's away form is better than their home form, but also why it's so good just in the context of the Premier League in general?
I don't particularly have an explanation for why the away is better than home, in that it's been quite odd at the Hill Dickinson so far, but often they seem to start games well, concede in the first half and then just sort of slip away. I think in terms of why the form is steady, in this kind of increasingly set-piece era Premier League, like, we are a big team. We are good at defending set pieces and attacking them. And I think that's part of the reason why the floor's pretty high. Moyes' teams are generally psychologically pretty good as well. We've got a lot of experience in key positions like centre-backs, Tarkowski, midfield with Idrissa Gueye. I think that helps in away games, in tight games. I'd also say to an extent the kind of up and down of results a little bit. We were quite affected by AFCON in that Illiman Ndiaye is our most important attacking player. He was away. Idrissa Gueye is probably the most, if not important, midfielder, most experienced figure there. He was away, both of them with Senegal. Their returns definitely will help stuff. But to be honest with you, the home form is a bit of a concern. It's the opposite to what you guys have been enduring.
Chris, we've got to think about what sort of 11 we might expect from Newcastle. Obviously, there's been a lot of football played recently. Anthony Gordon's been leading the line. Do we expect him to continue that against his former club? Or will Nick Valdemara move back into a forward position?
I'd be surprised if Anthony Gordon doesn't lead the line, because Newcastle just look more accomplished as an all-round side at the moment with Gordon through the middle. The press is better. They just, the shape and the way that the sort of movements of the and the triggers work, it just feels like it works better with Gordon through the middle. He came on the left when he did come on against Carabag, and because it was Azul and it was Wissa through the middle. But I'd be surprised if he doesn't start against his former club. And I am writing about sort of Anthony Gordon and almost asking that question now. Is he a centre forward? Because he and Eddie Howe have both spoken about really that's almost his preferred position in some ways. He definitely doesn't like playing on the right, we know that. But even if he offered him the opportunity to play on the left or through the middle, a lot of the time he would say through the middle. So I think it is fascinating. I do expect him to continue there. Elsewhere in midfield, Jacob Ramsey missed out midweek due to a sort of tight hamstring. Will he be back ready for the weekend? Will he be risked to start that game? Will Valdemara continue as a left-side number 8? I imagine probably so. You'd imagine Lewis Hall comes back in the side. Does Malik Chow immediately return to the 11 so that it's not two left-footers in centre-half? I would suspect so. He'd played 38 successive games before the suspension. So I think you will see changes just because Howard made 7 in midweek, but I don't think it'll be sort of rafters. It'd probably be about 4 or 5, I would have thought, from midweek.
Jacob, how do you see that Anthony Gordon move into the middle? Are you surprised at that move?
Yes and no. I remember having conversations a couple of seasons ago about Gordon, in which coaches all throughout the England age group sides had sort of said that they had seen his future long-term as being up front, sort of the way the game was going. There's signs of it happening at Everton, mostly because of injury issues. And then obviously at Newcastle, it's been a little bit more, I think it's probably fair to say, enforced over the last year or two. He does have a lot of traits which are suited to it in terms of, I think, his danger in sort of transitional moments. His movement has improved a lot, but I still think he's got the flaws, which meant that he didn't settle there earlier on, which are mainly around finishing. I still don't think he's taken that step, which has threatened to take on a few occasions, but personally, I still don't think he's actually taken it.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's fascinating. I mean, I know I've mentioned this before, but This isn't something that's just kind of come as a bolt from the blue in the last kind of few weeks. It wasn't like a kind of Hail Mary decision by Eddie Howe at Spurs to put him there, see what would happen, because this was what Newcastle did at the start of the season. Obviously, the context then was Isak refusing to play for Newcastle and, you know, there being very little options for Eddie Howe at that moment. But again, to say what I've said before, I thought at Aston Villa he was excellent. Newcastle didn't take their chances. He led the line, though. He set the tone. His pressing, his running was absolutely pivotal, I thought. He put Villa under huge pressure, and it carried on the form, I thought, that Gordon had showed over the summer in pre-season. He looked hungry. He looked really up for it. You know, you want to see a reaction from the rest of the squad when something big like the Isak thing was happening, and it happened. And he then goes into that Liverpool game at home, stays in that front position, and of course gets sent off. And it's a late tackle on Virgil van Dijk. And again, what happened internally at that point was that they talked about Gordon being affected by that sending off. And, you know, if you're a player who plays on the edge, if you're a player who plays with huge pace, if you're leading the press, if you're challenging players in that split-second environment, you're in danger. You're playing on a knife edge, and if you mistime a tackle, that is what might happen. And his form absolutely, undoubtedly suffered. He has a suspension. By the time he comes back into the team, Walter Mada's there. Walter Mada is having his Walter Mada moments, and he's scoring goals. And so you try and find a way of making that work. But I do think we saw, albeit in that very limited data set or whatever, we saw that Gordon absolutely has the capability of playing in that position and has a lot of the qualities to do that. I agree with Jacob 100%. I mean, I think, you know, obviously in the Champions League he scored a lot of goals. I don't think he is that sort of natural finisher player, but the kind of exciting thing about it is that he clearly wants to score goals, is hungry to score goals, and yeah, and I think if we're beginning to see again the Gordon that we saw at the start of the season, that is, you know, why not play him there? And I think that is he becomes a proper option in that position.
I do think he's also a player who in that role really flourishes with having more touches. I know there's some strikers who don't necessarily always want to be involved in build-up play if they're not scoring, whereas I think Gordon, and this goes, I mean, to be honest, for when he's on the wing as well, but he really needs to feel like he is part of the game, I think, to actually make an impact when he's playing up front. And part of that means that Newcastle's midfield need to be really on it to actually get him involved early. If he's only getting two or three sniffs of goal a game, I don't have loads of faith that he's going to take those moments. However, if he's sort of there getting repeated involvements, regardless of whether it's on goal or not, he just seems to get into the flow of it so much better and can then actually make an impact when he really needs to. He's fit enough, physical enough, that you don't worry about him positionally not being there for the moment he really needs to be. I just think that psychologically it makes such a difference to have him integrated. And obviously that's been part of the issue with Newcastle's other strike options this season.
Right then, chaps, let's finish things up there as we are pressed for time. Thank you very much for your time, Jacob. Thanks for popping in.
Cheers, thank you. Nice little cameo.
Can you get a last-minute press pass for the game, please? Because you did mention that the really terrible performance time they've been hammered was the game you were at, which was when Newcastle won 4-1 at Everton. So if you'd like to come up last minute, then that would be wonderful.
Saturday, 3 p.m. I'm covering the Om Loop.
What?
The Om Loop is his first race of the season. Belgium.
Cycling.
Oh, bikes. Right, okay, bicyclists.
Get on your bike.
Yes. Right then, a reminder that you can listen to our Matchday Extra Time episode by subscribing at podonthetine.supportcast.fm. Then on Saturday night, we'll have Matchday Reaction from St James's Park with our post-match podcast following the Everton game, which will be the next time you'll hear from us. Get in touch. The email is podonthetine@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter X and Blue Sky @podonthetime. Thanks for your time, Christopher Wolf.
You're very, very welcome. Yes, I hope to actually be at St James's Park on Saturday at this time. So
don't hurry.
Your own time. Thanks for your time as well, George Colton.
You're very welcome.
Lovely stuff. And thank you to Jacob Whitehead for joining us as well. Thanks for everybody out there listening. This has been Pod on the Time. Take care and enjoy the rest of the week. Goodbye.
Drew McIntyre here from WWE. Wielding the Claymore can be a life of chaos. When I'm not dominating in the ring, Chumba Casino is how this warrior takes a wee break. With hundreds of online social games and new weekly releases, there's always something fresh to try. And those daily boosts, next level. Even my free time feels like Valhalla. So when life feels like a battle, kick up your feet, have some fun, and let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.